Okay, Rabotai, Boker Tov. Today's daf from the Sechet Sanhedrin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Chof Vov. And the last thing that we spoke about was tax collectors and how they can actually be tzaddikim. And it's just a question of how it is that they are sticking to the government guidelines. Omer Rabbi Shimon. The next thing that we had was that really strange piece in the Mishnah that says that Rabbi Shimon points out that the people were originally called Osvei Shvi'it, and then Misharabua Anasim, not even sure what that means, when people that were pressuring them, were more of them, so then they started calling them the Seichrei Shvi'is, which is worse. What does it mean? My comment. Amar of Yudah. But Rabbi Shimon is saying like this. Bitchila, you omrim osve shvi kshirim, and sochar shvi is psumim. So obviously, the Torah allows you to go and to collect things to eat during Shemitah. I mean, that's a given. So they used to be able to distinguish between the two. People who would do business with shvi is, they were absolutely doing against the way that shvi is meant to be used. And because of that, they were fine. They were the ones that were puzzle. And then they came along and they said that actually they're all puzzle, even if they just seem to be doing okay and being safe for themselves. Why? Because Mishrabu Mamtsiema Otla Aniyim, the Azlu Aniyim, the Asfilu Maitu, these people started giving money to the poor to pretend to be collecting things in the fields for themselves, but they were actually delivering these things to these people who were buying it off of them for cheap and then selling it in their stores. So it meant that those people that were collecting, they were actually doing business. They weren't doing things for themselves. So then they ended up saying, we can't trust anybody. Everybody out there is apparently, we have to assume that they are people that are ready to take money and to do what is usher. So maybe they'll take money and they'll also take bribes for a psak halacha, or maybe they'll take money to lie as witnesses. So therefore they usher them. Kashuba b'nei Rechava. Now the b'nei Rechava, who were Eifa and Avimi, you remember we had before, did not like this pirush very much, because why does it say Misharabuha Anasim? These aren't Anasim. Anasim means people that oppress you, that pressure you. They're not pressuring anybody. They're giving them money to do something that's usher. That's not the way we would have read. It should say Misharabu Atagarim. When we've got the people that are doing business, businessmen that are buying the pears from Anim, that's what it should have said. Therefore, we don't agree. We say, you know what Reb Shimon meant? He meant Bitchila Yomrim Echad Zev Echad Zev Psulim. Actually, it was exactly the opposite. Originally, they assumed that even people that were just collecting, now it doesn't mean collecting, you know, a breakfast or something with a couple of potatoes or something like that. When it says collecting, it means if people were collecting an unusual amount, then they were looked at as not collecting for themselves. They used to assume that these people were no goodness. So they considered them all to be Asr, meaning that they're puzzle for Eders. Then Misharabuha Anasim. You know what Anasim means? Anasim means Arnona. People who had to give Arnona. Now that's, these people are the worst, as you know. Because Arnona at that time didn't quite mean what it means today. Arnona meant that you had to pay taxes on your property that were a certain percentage of what the government estimated the yield of the Sada would be. So if you didn't plant, you got thrown into jail. And if you, therefore, were thrown into jail, so one approach is being thrown into jail is ipso facto considered to be a sakanat nefashot. Many people just end up never getting out of jail, as we know, unfortunately, even Bisman Azeh. So that's the worst thing that you could do is get thrown into jail. So therefore, they considered it to be, this is one of the approaches, they considered it to be a real sakanat nefashot, not to plant. And they said everybody is allowed to go out as Kinemachris, Rabbi Yanai. Rabbi Yanai sent out a message, Poku vizir u b'shvi'is v'shumar nona. You should go out and plant even though it's shvius, because the arnona has got to be paid or it's dangerous. So that's one approach among the Rishonim. Tosis brings two approaches. There are many more. So one is that it's a sakaras afashas. The other is that since it's talking about shvius bizman hazeh, shvius bizman hazeh is derabonan, and therefore they held that you were allowed to do it for the arnona, which is not so poshut, because you're not allowed to be over an iser derabonan either, if it's only to save money. So what is he gaining by saying it's shvius bizman hazeh? Anyway, you're going to have to come on to the idea that it is a sakaras afashas. Well, it could be, you know, obviously it's a lesser level of sakana that we would accept as a sakana nefashot. Others say that the idea that you have to give up all of your money in order not to be over in the drabonim, but that's not where you're talking about a society-wide issue. That's on an individual basis. But that a drabonim should be aimed against the welfare of an entire society, that the drabonim wouldn't have done. Others learned the obvious pshat that the Rabbanan included this in their original takana of the din that shvius, you have to keep shvius bizman hazeh, as we saw when we were learning Yerushalmi, that included in that takana is that if it's going to cause undue hardship, so then they never were gozer on that particular issue. So that would explain Rabbi Yana. Then, when they saw that that's what was happening, then they came to say that people who are collecting even a lot of, looks very suspicious, they're collecting a lot of stuff, it would still be okay because they would be working in order to pay the arnona. But if they're actually in business, so chareshviyot, if they're actually in business, the chachomer were never matir going into business with perishviyot in order to pay arnona, just growing in order to pay arnona. So only the socharim are psulim. So that actually, the B'nai Rechovitz approach is the opposite of the original approach. Now we're being matir, anyone who is osev, but we're passeling people who are socharim. There was once, speaking of Reish Lakish, the rough Reish Lakish, rough and tough. So here was a story that actually touches on the shvius issue, once we're on the issue. Putting the two together, put Reish Lakish together with shvius, and you got yourself a bomb. Because it once happened that Reb Chiya Bar Zarnaki and Reb Shimon Ben Yatzodak, they were going and were going to be Ma'abed Hashana in Asya. Of course, the question is, you're not really allowed to be Ma'abed Hashana outside of Eretz Yisrael. So a lot of discussion, which Tosis raises over here. How can you be Ma'abed Hashana? So then, fine. So Tosis says, maybe it wasn't really Ibor, which is the Chishuv Hashana. They were trying to work it out. And the Raya is that this was during Shemitah, as we'll see. And it was, we said before, that the one time that we don't make a leap year is during Shemitah, because that way people are not going to have what to eat. So how could it be referring to Shemitah? That's how Tosfos understands it. Others understand that you can go, if there's no one that's left that is a gadol shekamocha in Eretz Yisrael, then you can be Ma'abed Shana. We had that discussion in various places. And others learned very poshut that it was talking about that there was a government edict against being able to be Ma'abed. It was the first time they were able to go out and escape and to have themselves a bezdin that would be able to be Ma'abed Shana, which is much more mashma than what Tosfos says, as we'll see in the Gemara, because the mashma'ut is that they were actually going to do the ibur, and that isn't going to work out, according to Tosfos. So anyway, there they were during the Shemitah year. They were on their way to Asya, and Reish Lakish meets them on the road, and he joins up. In order, he says, listen, I know I'm not invited, and we had before only people who are invited or able to come up. I'm not coming to be part of the Besdin. I just want to learn. I want to learn, like, the kind of things that you do there, what the procedure is, and the time maybe when I will be called upon to be part of this kind of thing. So I will have the advantage of learning from you great men how to take care of it. Anyway, there they are, walking along the road. And they see a guy, Chazilahu Gavra de Kokorin. They see a person who is doing work in his field during Shemitah. And Reb Chiya Bar Zarnaki and Reb Shimon Ben Yotzadak, they don't do anything. And Rish Lakish is outraged. He says, this guy's a Kohen, and he's sitting here doing Harisha during Shemitah. Don't you guys think that you should put him into Cherem and put him into Nidui? How do you just walk by? Amrullah, they say to Rish Lakish. We'll see later on why he says it's a Kohen. So they say to Rish Lakish, what do you mean? Why are you assuming that he's doing something wrong? He could always say that I am an Agistan Anibatocho. I'm basically working here. I'm a hired hand. This is not my land. So there's different approaches. So therefore what? Okay, so some learn that it's talking about that the land is owned by a goy, and since Bisman Hazer, which we said the Rabbanan, the goy, for sure have a kayak to be a fuke, the kedusha of the Oretz. Or he could claim maybe that he was working even though it was a Jewish land, but that he was just working in order to help the guy pay his taxes, like Rashi learns. Whatever. But the point is, there's always a way to be Malamed Zchus that this person was not actually going out to do an Avera. We're walking by and we don't know the circumstances. We're going to assume the best. We're not going to assume the worst. So because of that, he said it was okay. Fine. They walk along a little bit further and they come to Chazelu Gavadavi Kosar Bekarme. They see a guy who's working in a vineyard, and he's pruning the vines during Shemitah. Rish Lakish blows up. They don't say anything. He says to them, here we go again. A Kohen who is pruning during Shemitah, and you guys don't do anything. I said to Rish Lakish, what makes you think that the guy is doing an Avera? Maybe he could always say, La'akel beit abada nitzarich. I just needed some of these vines, not in order to prune, but because I was going to press some of my olives. And, you know, when you press olives, you take sticks and things, you put it around the olives, that holds it together while you press them. And what makes you, and that you're allowed to do, if it's not for the sake of the vines, actually, it may be damaging the vines. So what are you getting all hot under the collar for, they say to Rish Lakish. And Rish Lakish responded with what became an interesting saying, which was, Halev yodea im la'ekel, im la'kalkalot. The heart knows the truth. You may believe all of this garbage. You really think you can know in your heart whether you're doing things for an ekel, you're doing it for your olive press, or you're doing it in order to be a bum. La'kalkalot. So that became, you know, people always have these excuses and rationalizations, but we know the truth. Hey, wait a minute. Which was the first story, the one about the pruning or the one about the plowing? Well, I mean, look, the way that we just said it over was the actual order in which it happened. So then why did they change their mind? They said that the first guy was an Agiston. They could have said the second guy who's doing the pruning is an Agiston. So people have a right to do the work, as we just learned, in order to pay their taxes. So it must be that first he talked to them about the guy who was pruning, and they say, well, it's not necessarily that you're pruning because you want to fix the vines. You may be pruning in a way that even damages the vines, and they need the sticks, not the better vines. Then when Rish Lakish made his little famous statement of La'akel, Olak, Alkalot. So then, okay, they figured, all right, so we'll give a broader answer. So then they gave the answer of the Agiston. Hey, how come Rish Lakish kept saying the guy's a Kohen? Why, of all things, a Kohen? So Mishnah Kohen. That's because Kohanim are Chashudim on Shvius. I'm going to prove to you that Kohanim are not trustworthy when it comes to Shvius. You know why? Because Kohanim, they're always in a special situation when it comes to Truma, comes to Kadesh. So they are always used to the idea that something has Kedusha other people can't do, but we can. So when it comes to Shemitah, they have the same attitude, you know. That's for the regular people, but we Kohanim, I mean, we have special rules. It's probably okay for a Kohen. Anyway, so they have this sort of lackadaisical attitude when it comes to things of Kedusha. So that's why he called them Kohanim, and I'll prove it to you, because there's actually a braita, the Tanya, Sa'atru Mashanaf Lameya Sa'in Shal Shvi'i Ta'ale. So remember that we have a din of Midumeh, which means that if Truma gets mixed with Chulin, the whole thing can become Osir to eat for Zarim. But that's only if you don't have 100 times the Chulin to be Mevatel the Truma. If you have 100 times, so then you're Mevatel it. So if it falls into Shvius, so it's the same idea. If you have 100 times as much Shvius, so then anybody is allowed to eat it. But if it falls into less than 100 times the amount of Truma, then you're going to have to let the whole thing rot. So the obvious question is, why in the world let the whole thing rot? All you need to do is you can sell the entire lot to a Kohen, and the Kohen will eat it before this Zman HaBiur, and they'll eat it B'Kedushat Shvi'it, and he's allowed to eat the Truma. And even though you're not normally allowed to do business with Shemitah stuff, but you certainly do a one-time sale, when that's not called doing business, in which you're able to translate that into food, and meanwhile, you don't have to leave it to rot. Sell it to a Kohen, except for the price of Truma that you owe to a Kohen anyway, and it sells at a lower price because it's got a limited market only of Kohanim. And Reb Chiya quoted Ula as saying, you see, from here you see you can't trust Kohanim as far as you can throw them when it comes to Shemitah. And therefore, if you're going to sell them the Perah Shvius, you have to assume that they are not going to eat it because of Shvius. They'll eat it after the Zman HaBiur and so on. And therefore, you don't have this option. So Mamela Reish Lakish assumed, if a guy is sitting here doing something in Shemitah, he must be a Kohen.
Is this why he doesn't hold by the Kaf Kol Adam LeKaf Zchus? Yeah.
Well, sweetheart, you must wait to the end of a Sugya before you comment. Amru. So they realize this guy, Reish Lakish, this guy is a Dracop. Tronahizu. This guy is a Dracop. Every time there's something, right away he assumes the worst. Right away he's shouting at us, right? And we're trying to tell him, relax. There's plenty of ways to be Melamed Zchus, as Avon points out. So they decided they don't want this guy up there in the Aliyah where they would do the Kiddush HaChodesh. So what do? They go into the elevator and they get the door closed before he gets in, and up they go, and that's it. They lock the elevator on the upper stand. Reish Lakish is stuck downstairs, and there's no way he's getting up there after he walks with them all the way to Asia, right? Now, that did not exactly. So they pull the ladder up. Okay, so Reish Lakish was quite upset. Anyway, so when he got back, he goes to Reb Yochanan and he says, I don't understand. The people that are going to do the Kiddush Hashana, those people are Choshed al Shvius. Are people like that allowed to be the ones that are the best? I mean, these people don't care about Shemitah. Tells them over the whole story. They don't care about Shemitah. How do you allow people like this to be involved in Ibur Hashana? Oh, then he says, it's classic Reish Lakish. Oh, he says, I realize now why they would be kosher. Because it's the same thing. We had before the story, remember, about the three herders, right? And they were talking about the weather, and they were saying, if it's hot and they have to end the shore, and the whole story over there, you remember we had a few days ago? And we said, of course, the Rabbanan are not relying on these cattle cowboys. They were just, it worked out that what they said happened to be true. So I guess the same thing over here. The Rabbanan are relying on their actual astronomical data. And then they send these guys. So these guys are a bunch of cattle herders, cowboys. Then he says, no, wait a minute. You can't allow cowboys in this case. Because in that case, obviously, it wasn't the cowboys that went ahead and did the actual. Are you guys able to hear me? People look around. Yeah. It's not the cowboys who did the Ibur Shana. Over here, it's the cowboys who are doing the Ibur Shana. And therefore, it's not kosher. Why? Because they are a Kesher Rishayim. These people are a group of bad men. So the Gedolei Hador, you understand? These guys are a Kesher Rishayim. We'll see what that means. And a Kesher Hashayim can't be part of a Bezdin. So the whole Bezdin is puzzle, and the whole Ibor Hashanah will be puzzle. What the heck is going on here, says Reish Lakish to Rabbi Yochanan. Man, you thought the Briskers were intense, huh? I mean, so he's got a reason. Forget about the Cherem on going into Echel Shlomo. I mean, this is child's play. These guys are a Kesher Hashayim. Oy vey, says Rabbi Yochanan. Doc, this is going too far. This is bad news. There's got to be a limit. Calling these gedolim a keshel shereshayim. Anyway, so they heard about it. Rabbi Bar Zarnaki and Rabbi Shimon ben Yatzadak heard about this whole story. And when they got back, they said to Rabbi Yochanan, "I don't understand. You didn't say anything. This guy goes ahead and calls us a bunch of cowboys." And you just sit there and smile, you know, until he actually claims that the Bezdin is possible because it's Kesher Hashayim. That's when you finally make a comment. You're also no good. Everybody's really getting upset about this little story. And Rabbi Yochanan said to them, it's two Lashonas, but probably the correct one. And if they would have called you sheep herders, which is even lower class, why should I say anything to them? This is the way people talk to each other all the time. And, you know, it's not something that you make a big fuss over. Don't make a fuss over it, Bama. They start calling you Kesher Shereshayim. Now, that's a different thing. Anyway, what's fascinating over here is the obvious question that, as far as I know, only the Tzlach asks this question, but it's such a powerful question. Here, Reish Lakish is walking along with these guys. They don't do a thing when he identifies two cases. He keeps walking along with them. He was going to go up in the elevator with them. All of a sudden, when they lock him out of the elevator, now they're a Kesher Shereshayim. Now they're a bunch of bums. Now they're cowboys. I mean, come on. If you're telling me that this is intellectual honesty and that, well, you know, what are you supposed to do? The Chachomim are really very hot under the collar when people start acting in ways that are against the Torah. I understand that. But what does he only get hot under the collar when they lock him out of the elevator? That's very suspicious. It all seems to be a function of the amount of honor that they pay to him. I mean, that doesn't put Reish Lakish in a very good light over here, says the Tzlach. And if you think about it, you'll see the answer yourself. The Tzlach brings it from the Pasuk. The Pasuk makes it even more powerful. Because in the Pasuk it says, Matzdik Rasha, Umashiat Tzadik, to Avat Hashem Gam Shnehem. Somebody always, he finds chusim for Rishoyim. But when it comes to the Tzadikim, he's always got something bad to say. That is disgusting. Mela, if a guy has a lot of limut chus, no, okay, so he's like Rebarnea. He always finds reason why his professor in Tel Aviv U can be considered part of Klal Yisrael, and we could quote him and so on. Okay, I understand. So he's always melamed tzchus. So but when it comes, if somebody's melamed tzchus, but when it comes to the good guy, I'm the good guy, says Reish Lakish. So now all of a sudden they're sensitive. Look at this. Oh, I'm a Dreykop. Exactly. So who's the Dreykop? Me. La creme de la creme. And who's the people that they can tolerate? Oh, the people you got to tolerate. Those are the people that are going ahead and teaching in Tel Aviv U. Oh, no. Then that means these guys are a Kesher Rishayim. So that's why he responded very sweet. No? I don't see that Ori appreciates this, but I guess, you know, there's more important things like diaper changes or whatever. So now the question is, what do we mean by a Kesher Rishayim exactly? Where do we get that? I mean, that's interesting words. By the way, I can't resist with telling you a story. Speaking of Reish Lakish, and speaking of Brisker, it's an amazing story. Wait, I'll tell it to you after we see what Kesher Rishayim is. Anyway, so Shevna was one who was in charge of the whole household of Chizkiyahu HaMelech, and he was like the most important in charge of everything next to the king. And he was a tremendous Talmud Chacham. And when he would give a shir, 130,000 Talmidim would come to hear the shir. And Chizkiyahu himself would give a drasha. There was only 110,000 Talmidim. So he would be Dorish B'Tlei Sarivasa, and Chizkiyahu would be Dorish B'Chatzre. Anyway, when Sancheriv came and he made the siege against Yerushalayim, Shevna believed that the correct policy was to surrender. And that way, Sancheriv would come in, the Beis HaMikdash would be destroyed, but he felt they didn't have any choice. So he writes a letter to Sancheriv, and in the letter, which he delivers via arrow, he shoots an arrow with this letter attached to the forces of the enemy, and it says, Shevna v'si'ato ishlimo, Chizkiyo v'si'ato lo ishlimo. So they say, listen, we have a political breakdown over here. The king, he really doesn't understand that he has to surrender, but we've got 130,000 people over here on my side. We outweigh them. We feel that we should surrender. Fine. So that would, of course, have caused, if they would have opened up the gates, Chizkiyo and Sancheriv would have come in, Chizkiyo would have been killed with all of his people and so on. And this is written, actually, it's a remez that David HaMelech writes in Tehillim. Kinei harishaim yidruchun keshet, konunuch itzam al yeter. So what is this referring to? I mean, the Pasha is referring to speaking Lashon Hara. But here the Gemara finds in it a remez of what is to happen in the future with Chizkiyo and Sancheriv, that the Rishoyim, so this is a reference to Shevna, that they pull back their bow and they shoot their arrow in order to destroy the tzaddik. Meanwhile, Chizkiyo was very nervous because he knew that politically he was outnumbered and that this was 130,000 Talmidim means that the Bezdin of Shevna was a greater Bezdin than his own. So he said, look, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu paskins according to the Rov. So maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu will paskin like Shevna. And because of that, we're all going to be destroyed. Dilma chas v'shalom, not a daite de kutshu brichu basaruba. Maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu is on Shevna's side. And once the Rov surrenders, I know what's going to happen. The whole city is going to be destroyed with the Beis HaMikdash. So given the Ruva Minsere, Nunami Minsere, we're going to end up having to be given over into his hands. Yishayo Anavi comes, Yamarlo, ridiculous. Lot, and this is where we get the word Kesher Rishayim. Don't say that this is considered to be a real group just because people see, you all see those ridiculous, hurtful advertisements. Anachnu harov. First of all, that's a bunch of bull. But anyway, even if you were, it would be kesher reshayimu, but kesher reshayim eno min aminyan. So basically, it doesn't count. So based on those words, that's what Rish Lakish was referring to, we call this Bezdin a Kesher Rishayim, and therefore this Bezdin cannot be Ma'abed Hashana. That, Rabbi Yochanan felt, was, okay, cool it, man, enough is enough. Anyways, so there was a story during the Milchemet HaShichrur. So over there, there was still a lot of discussion about what was going to be the government relationship to the Chinuch HaKharedi. At that point, there was no Charedi, there was no concept Charedi, but the Chinuch of those who are Shem Reter. So the Chazon Ish and the whole Bezdin of the Chazon Ish in Bnei Brak, they held that there should be a Chinuch HaTzmori that is government supported and that will meet the government standards for the Rov Ha'am, and that they will teach Limudei Chol and so on according to the core curriculum that the government determines. And that's the only way that there's going to be a Hatzola of Torah Chinuch in the country. And that otherwise, if you insist on doing things your way, you're going to end up with a tiny percentage of children being taught to be Jewish. The rest of the country will go completely off the wall. The Bezdin in Yerushalayim, of which the Brisker Rav was also very strongly supportive, they held that you have to keep the Torah pure and you can't allow the government to control and in the end destroy what would be the curriculum of Jewish schools. Right? Valid machlokas, which had its roots back in history as well in Europe. Anyway, so the Brisker Rav decided that he has to go into Bnei Brak, which was very dangerous at the time, to take the trip to Bnei Brak from Yerushalayim. They were shooting from the mountaintops. The Arabs would shoot on buses and so on. So he felt that it's a time of tzorah for Klal Yisrael. He has to go and talk to the Chazon Ish and explain to him why it's the wrong approach. So fine. So they told him, but it's dangerous in this. He says, look, if I would be sure that we can call it a Kesher Rishoyim, okay, but I'm not sure we could call the Chazon Ish Bezdin a Kesher Rishoyim. So because of that, I feel, that's wild. So because of that, I feel we have to go. Okay, it's all based on this Gemara. Anyway, so there was a time before all of this happened. Shevna had a long-term plan to be taking over the Malchus. So he was gradually building his base, have a stronger base than Chizkiyahu. And one of the things that he had in mind was he was going to make himself a beautiful kever amongst the Kivrei Beis David. He was sure that he was going to be, that's where he belonged, you know, next to be buried next to David HaMelech. Anyway, so Yeshayo meets him and says to him, who exactly do you have here that you have in common with that you think that you have a right to make one of these caves as your kever? God is going to push you out of here and move you around the way a man has to wander. What is Taltele Gavr? Amarav, you see from here, this is Nogia Halacha Lamaisa. Tiltula de Gavra, Kashi midi itata. Apparently, for a man to move, this is counterintuitive to many people, for a man to move is more difficult than a woman to move. So we're used to the idea, you know, a woman is very connected to her, but the fact is that a woman makes a home wherever she is. A man has a very hard time in reestablishing himself. And because of that, this is nogea the halacha. If two people have to move, one of them has to move out of a neighborhood. It's the divorce, they're both in the same area. So the one that should move is the woman, because for the man, it's harder. Continues the pasuk. Ve'otcha ato. And he's going to put otcha means normally to put a scarf around your mouth. On Rav Yossi Bar Bichanini, you know what this teaches us? That Shevna ended up becoming a leper. Because here it says otcha ato, and in the pasuk of how to treat the tzaras, it says va'alsafa miate, that the mitzora has to indeed wrap himself around with something up to his lip. So nof yitznafchatz nefak hadur el eretz rechavat yadayim. He is now. This has very beautiful implications about how to understand another pasuk that we talk about all the time, and we love this pasuk so much. And we always discuss it, which is the divrei Torah kedarvanot kemasmerot netuim, the beautiful pasuk that the Gemara in Chagiga analyzes about how to understand divrei Torah. So the parshtas of that pasuk is divrei chachamim kedarvonot, is that they are like, as the Gemara says in Chagiga, they're like a darbin. So I forgot how you say a darbin in English. You remember Barnea? It's that thing that is on either side of
prod, not prod.
No, not a prod. It's on the bridle. I forgot what it's called. So if the animal turns its head to one side or the other, there's something that's sharply, it pricks it, so it keeps that facing straight. And that way it, oh shoot, I can't remember what it's called.
Not the yoke?
What?
Maybe something the yoke. Guidance?
The bit?
It's on the bit, but it's a particular piece that keeps it. They used darbein for a cattle prod, but that's not what it's referring to over here. It's a prod that's built into the yoke. Anyway, it's not our issue here. So now the question is, how do we read this pasuk? HaKadosh Baruch Hu tzanof yitznafcha. Okay, so tzanof means that it's going to go all around you, right? So if we learn it as kadur, that it's like a wall, and el eretz rechavat yadayim, he's going to tear you out of here, out to the field, basically, because of the way that you wanted to bring bizyonos on the base Chizkiyahu. So it says, because of this, Shoma Tamut, the Shoma Markavot Kvodecha, Klon Beit Adonecha, that's where your supposed glory is going to end up, out dead, out on the flats, and you won't have any place over here. So Rashi learns the word kadur means like a dur. Okay, so a dur means a straight wall. So in other words, wherever you turn, there will be enemy troops that are going to be around you. So you're going to be surrounded. But Tosfos Tainas, that kadur means a ball, right? So it's true, it should say kikadur, God will surround you like a ball, meaning that you will be besieged up and down on all sides. You'll have nowhere to run. You'll be like the inside of a soccer ball. Okay, that's a beautiful metaphor, but it doesn't say like a ball. It says kadur. So Tosfos suggests that even though it says kadur, oftentimes when you have a chaf at the beginning of a word, that chaf can double as the chaf like ki kadur. So it just sort of gets shortened into kadur. It's not a beautiful thing to learn. Now, because of that, he brings a raya from this beautiful pshat in the Yerushalmi. And it says over there that what is the meaning of divrei chachamon kedarvonot? It means kikadur banot, like the girls' balls that they play with when they throw the ball back and forth one to another. Kikadur banot, cute. And what does that mean? Stunning. What a pshat in Yerushalmi. Gavi, you have to show your face for this one, you bum. The meaning is that in the same way that you take a ball and you throw it to the other one throws it to the next person down the line, and everybody's passing the ball down the line. That's what Divrei Torah is like. Somebody makes a chiddush, and he sends it to his friend. His friend adds a little piece. He says, oh, did you hear what so-and-so said? He sends it to him. This guy adds another chop. Ah, that's why it says in the pasuk. And it just goes like a ball that's going from one girl to the next until it has this massive shot that just gathers momentum. That's kedarvanot. It's beautiful. Anyway, but meanwhile, it's also an indication of how to read the letter chof in words like this, which is really beautiful to hear. Okay, so that was just part of our analysis of the nature of the Kesher Rishaim, and Yeshayahu HaNavi says to him, you'll get exactly the opposite. So what happened indeed? So Shevna, as God is 130 people together, they're coming out in the middle of the night, open up the gates of Yerushalayim, marching out to Sancheriv's army. Gavriel HaMalach comes along and slams the gate shut so that none of the people can go out except Shevna, who's at the head, and he's coming out, and the gate slams. Nobody else is there. So they say to him, okay, where's the 130,000 people? You said you've got 130,000 people on your side. Gosh, I don't know, says Shevna. I guess they changed their mind at the last minute. Oh, come on, man. You got to be kidding. You're playing games with Sancheriv? That's a dangerous game to play. So what did they do? They drilled a hole through his heels, and they put ropes through it and attached the ropes to horses, and then they had the horses run across all of the Kotzin, the Barkanim. That was the end of Shevna. Omar Rabbi Elazar, this Shevna, he was a Baal Hana'aya. This guy was a real, he was a high liver. You know, everything was in terms of his own pleasure. We see this because the Navi is told, go to the Sochein. So it's true that a Sochein is used as the word, as we use it today. He's a representative of the treasuries. You can call him the Sochein. He's the guy who is the one who stands in between the Melech, whatever. But we know also that the word Sochein is the word that we use for exactly what we had in the Gemara before. Vatehilo Sochenet is Avishaga Shunamit, the real comforter. Okay, so he's a Sochein, he's a comfort seeker. And therefore, it's me making a double meaning about this guy. He always puts his own comfort ahead of what's important. Furthermore, we find that it says ki hashatot yehirasun tzadik ma paal. So we were continuing what we had before, that we said that Dovid HaMelech, we insisted that Dovid HaMelech's words about HaRisha'im Yidruchun Keshet is that it's a reference to Shevna. Because the truth is, you can see that from the continuation of the psukim in Tehillim that he wrote. It goes on to say, Ki hashatot yeharasun tzadik ma pa'al. If the shatot are ruined, so then what did the tzaddik manage to achieve? What does that mean? So Rav Yehuda and Ravina argue. One of them says, if Chizkiyahu and those that are with him are neharasim, so somehow or other we're calling Tzidkiyahu the hashatot, Chizkiyahu the hashatot, which the Gemara is going to explain why. But if they are yehirasun, so then people will say, so what does the tzaddik manage to do? Here's Chizkiyahu the tzaddik, or what is HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Is the tzaddik Shalom? Doesn't he have a reward to give to Chizkiyahu? And the other one says, the Shatot refers to the Beit HaMikdash. If the Beit HaMikdash comes up and destroyed because of these arrows, if the Beit HaMikdash yareis tzaddik mapa'al, so what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu achieve in his world if this is what's allowed to happen? Whereas Ula says, ilu makshevotav shel otav rasha einan neharasot. So the meaning over here, according to him, is Shevna, is the thoughts of Shevna. If they are going to allow to be alive and they're not destroyed, then tzaddik mapa'al. So then what did Chizkiyahu achieve? Or what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu achieve? Now, I'm aware of the word shatot when it comes to the Mandi Omar, the last shot that we had over here, which was Ula. I know that the Machshavas are considered to be shatot. So Bishlam Lamandi Omar Ilu Machshavot Tav Shalot Rasha. That would explain Hashatot Yehirasun, because remember, even with Paro, what does it say? Lo Shat Libo Gam Lazot. Okay, so shat is used oftentimes as a way to consider things in your mind. So if his hashatot, meaning, so if these ideas of the Russia are not going to be taken away, tzaddik mapa'al. And also whoever it was that said that the pshat was, and if the Beit HaMikdash would be destroyed, tzaddik mapa'al. Yes, I understand why we would use the word shatot for the Beit HaMikdash. Because that's why we have the Evan HaShetiyah that's built on the word shat. So Evan, Haitasha Mimot, Nevi'im Rishonim, Nushtiyah Haitani Kret. So we called the Beis HaMikdash basically Kisham Hushtat Olam. That's what it's based on. But how in the world did Chizkiyahu get referred to as Hashatot? That I don't understand. According to Mandi Omar, who says, if Chizkiyahu ends up being hurt, because look, it says in the pasuk, "Ki laHashem mitzukei aretz," the very pillars upon which the earth stands, they are in the hands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the tzaddikim, vayoshet aleihem tevel. This is based on tzaddik yisod olam. So if the shatot, which is the yisodei olam, which are the tzaddik, then that's what it means. Ishatot Yerasun is indeed Chizkiyahu HaTzadik together with his people. Or there's another way to see Hashatot. He flee Eitza, Higdil Tushiya. So we call Tushiya. The Gemara understands Tushiya means, as we'll see, it's based on the word Shat on To, Tushiya, which means what? Omer Rabbi Hanan, why do we call the Torah Tushiya? The Tushiya means that, like an individual who has tremendous initiative. It's a person that's extremely resourceful. He's full of ideas and ways to respond to things. That's what Tushiya is called. Why do we call the Torah Tushiya? Mipnei shimateshet kocho shel adam. It actually weakens the strength of people. Okay, so that's the pashut, the meaning that people understand, that people who sit, learn all day, they end up becoming weak. There's a lot of beautiful nekudas on that one. Is very sweet. The kochar shel adam, that it's machlish, is the kochivo tzem yadi shel adam. So it ends up teaching him to be weaker if it comes to believing that everything is up to him, so he no longer has those feelings. Also, the others learn that Tushiya means he has less desire in his body to do ra and so on, which is a little bit of a problem. And others understand that since at the end of the pasuk it says gevura, that the Tushiya turns into gevura, it means that first it weakens his animalistic strength and it gives him a human strength that's built on the power of will. It reminds me of a beautiful story that Shmulek tells me about his wife's grandmother lived in my building in Netanya. And she lived up on the 9th floor. She was like 98 years old and she wouldn't use a Shabbos elevator. And she would climb to the 9th floor. And he would say, where do you have the koyach to climb to the 9th floor? So she says, I don't have any koyach. I only have will. It's just pure ratzon. There's no energy at all, which is beautiful. Okay, so that's one explanation. Another explanation is that the Torah is called Tushiya because it was given as if in a very weak way. HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't want to make a big fuss in giving over the Torah Shebaal Peh because he did not want it to be given over to the Ayin Hara. And that, remember, the Satan was doing his best that there shouldn't be given a Torah to Yisrael. And he brought the Malachim, Utaina, that the Mayanosh Kitiskereno, and so on. So therefore, it was Tash. Now, the most incredible pshat is this pshat. It's called Tushiya because the Torah is Dvarim Shel Torah, Shel Tohu, Shel Olam Mishutat Aleihem. So it's a combination of the word Tohu and Shat. So now, in what sense is it Dvarim Shel Tohu? What does Tohu mean in this context? So Rashi says it's Dvarim Shel Tohu because it's basically nothing but words, right? And if it's nothing but words, there's no physical reality to the meaning of those words. It's not part of physics at all. There's nothing in it that you can touch in terms of the meaning. And that is the ultimate sense of tohu. The tohu that the world is created with is actually just pure quantum possibilities. There's nothing to touch. And that's exactly what the Torah is. You're being Isaac in things that, where are they? What impact do they have on the world? Where's your nuclear weapons? What's going on? And that's what the entire world is built of, both in terms of physics and in terms of your learning. That's an incredible shot. So the world is shot al tohu. And in a sense, that's the ultimate tushia. Speaking of resourcefulness, if you're going out to create universes, it's really much easier to create them that way than to start along and, you know, putting together things as a very busy creator. You have to be a lazy creator. That's the Tushiya. What a beautiful, beautiful approach. Anyway, so that may well be the, but so we have a lot of reasons why it would be, the Torah would be called, Tushiya. Wonderful. Another beautiful pshat, once we're talking about thoughts and thinking and the impact of thinking on the world, is Omar Ula, Makshava Mo'elet Afila L'Divrei Torah. So Rashi's second, that's a pshat, I always say Rashi's second pshat because it's so amazing. Thinking about things, meaning making all the plans for things. The more plans you make, the more you're guaranteed to have them all messed up. And the more clear-cut your ideas are that I'm going to be able to achieve this by that day and this by that day. You know, it's, I love these Americans, you know, well, June 24th, we're going to be going for a vacation in 2026. I love it. They end up having their entire city burned to the ground in 2024, but that's okay. Anyway, so the idea of Makshava Mo'elet, even for Divrei Torah, says Rashi, so a guy comes up with a plan, I'm going to be finished Shas by doing this Masechet up to this date and this Masechet up to this date. That is guaranteed to be messed up even when it comes to Divrei Torah. Shenemar mefer makshavot arumim velot asena yedehem tushia. HaKadosh Baruch Hu messes up all of the plans of these smart people and they will in the end not accomplish the tushiya, which we just learned means divrei Torah. So you see that even divrei Torah is destroyed by over planning. Well, my rabbi, now let's not make that a general rule. If all of their planning is all lishma and everything is for HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name, then it's not going to destroy their plans, because it says, Rabot machshavot belev ish. People think all kinds of things. And as they say in Yiddish, what do they say in Yiddish?
Menstracht und Gott lacht.
Thank you. Menstracht und Gott lacht. There you go. You just saw a beautiful example of machshavot erubim, right? I got it all worked out. And then comes the senior moment. Or what are you going to say now, you idiot? Okay. So we also have this pasuk of Rabot Machshavot Belev Ish, Batzat Hashem Yitakum. All of these thoughts, it's true, normally they're enough to mess up your life. But if it's all for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he'll save you from it. And therefore, Eitzah Sheyesh B'Dvar Hashem Yitakum Lo'olam, despite your planning, it can still work out. Okay, anyway, that was a beautiful interlude, but now we have to get back to the Mishnah. Now, Rabbi Yehuda said, when is it, Rabbi Yehuda Ematai, so when do we say that people who are gamblers are not able to be a dayan or to be a that's only if they in them umanut elazu, but if they have other income, so then it's okay. Omer Rabbi Abo, Omer Rabbi Elazar, actually, that's how we paskin, because the problem is that he doesn't have a real sense of what life is about. And therefore, he's puzzled because there's no chashivas to him for people's money and for people's business, and he cannot judge properly when he's not part of reality. If you're making all of your money on random movements of currency values on your computer, you know nothing about life. The Amar Rabbi Abo, Amar Rabbi Elazar, the cases in the Mishnah are not automatically puzzled. They're puzzled only when they put up a notice in the Beis Din or in the Bate Knesset that these people are considered to be posel, and that way people will know that these shouldn't be the people that you use for edus. But otherwise, I mean, what am I going to say? 10 years later, somebody's going to turn out to be posel, and now my whole shopping plaza that I built is not mine because we had the wrong people signing on the contracts. So therefore, they need hachrasa. Now, the question is, what about... We said that there were extras that we added, right? One of the things that we added was the ro'eh. So cowboys were added. So there's a machlokas between Rav Ach and Ravina, whether a hachraza is needed there or whether it's an automatic disqualification. Schadamer boy hachraza, v'chadamer lo boy hachraza. So now, whoever it is, that Madi Omar who says lo boy hachraza, that would explain why it is that Rav was reported by Rav Yehuda as paskening before Stam Ro'eh Pasul. That means Stam, that means that he has not been put up as his name in the paper, that he's Pasul. But if you hold that even a Ro'eh needs Hakrasa, how could Rav say Stam Ro'eh is Pasul? Only a Ro'eh that's mentioned is Pasul. No, what that would mean is that the Mistoma Machrizino, he meant to say that even though we don't have any evidence against the man, the very fact that we find out that he is working as a cowboy, we automatically will put his name up. But it's true that it still requires hachrasa. Now, there was once a maisa where somebody had this property that was gifted to him, and on the gift document, it says that so-and-so, they have the signature, so-and-so gave this property, and it's signed by two people who are actually known to be mafioso. Sover of Papa Vashmul Akshur, the Lachrazina Nalayim. The Papa thought, well, okay, it doesn't matter. The guy who had the gift given, he had no idea that they were mafioso, you know, because after all, it wasn't up on the list of official disqualified witnesses. So, means that it's still a kosher document. Or Malay Rava, no. The only time that we need hachroza is where the person's status is a derabbonanish, which were all the cases that we had in the Mishnah. So nehid the beinah rabbonan, the hachroza berabbonan, the gazlan derabbonan, a gazlan diraita, like these people who literally go around and they steal and they hold up banks and snore, that is considered to be a psul deraisa. Over there, they're, by definition, they're posel. Why would we need to be machris on them? Omer of Nachman, ochle dover acher psulim le'edibs. People who eat, how Tosfos proves, and Rashi says this is the proportion, that what you would think it means is not what it means. You would think it means people that eat pig meat, and that's not what it means. It means people who eat based on money that they get from Ovdei Avodah Zarah. So they go to the church, and they're given money by the local pastor, and they live off of that money. Those people are puzzled because they are ready for the sake of having extra money, so they make it look like you can't get money from the Beit HaKnesset, you know. There's no Gabbai Tzedakah. You have to go to the church for money. It's a terrible Chilul Hashem. And therefore, they're puzzled because they're ready to do that for money. And this is Hani Mili Befarhes. It's only if they do this and people know about it. If they do it Betzina, we find out about it. So then we don't puzzle them. And the truth is that even if they do it openly, if the bottom line is that they would starve without it, so even Befarhes or Amlo de Efshar Betzuni Betzina, even then it would be possible for them to do it in a way that people wouldn't know. And nonetheless, he's ready to be mechalal shem shemayim, the kamavazi nafshi befaresya. But if this is what he needs in order to survive, avolof shalach chiyus, if he wasn't able to do it any other way, this is his chiyus, and he has a right to live. I want to continue because we're really over time, and we can start this next sugya tomorrow, Bezrat Hashem.